this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time. Welcome, everybody, back to Wellness in Dentistry. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Kyle Stanley. I am a dentist, a tech entrepreneur, speaker, and a researcher. And I am joined with your other co-host for today and for every day, actually, Dr. Martin Mendelson. He is a disabled dentist, a coach, a speaker, and a thought leader. Together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry. And if you like listening to our podcast and you'd love to spend a few days with us, because these get recorded sometimes before they're actually aired, go to wellnessanddentistry.com, go to our links, and you can look up our Lightside Live course. We give this maybe two times a year. So if we don't have a date ready, make sure you get on the wait list to hear about it first before anybody else. Now, today, get ready to learn about emotional resilience in the dental profession. Dentistry is freaking hard, and there are challenges that you're going to face. And if you want to do this for 20, 30, 40, 46 years, like my father did it, you need to be emotional resilient. And it's not something that we learn generally. It's something we have to put effort into. We have to put time into. You have to put money into, but it will pay dividends in the long term. So, Martin, you are a master of this. You taught me a lot about this specific subject. How should we be thinking about this for our colleagues in dentistry?
Well, you know, this kind of came up, you know, for those to kind of pull back the curtain. Kyle and I usually have a list and we talk about what do we want to talk about today. And this morning, I had something really disappointing happen within the framework of my business. And I was not happy about it. I will say that just point blank.
But Martin, you are a coach and you have certifications in happiness study. I thought we're supposed to be happy all the time.
Yes, that's what you would think, right? It's actually the polar opposite because happiness is a comparative emotion. And Dr. Ben Shahar's framework that I was certified to teach and train within or on is SPIRE. And the E of SPIRE is emotional whole being. And it's about allowing our emotions to flow through and flow past us. So toxic positivity is what you tongue-in-cheekly were challenging me with before. That's good vibes only. I'm gonna ignore these negative thoughts, etc. And the truth is there's a different way to look at this that we're gonna talk about, because we need to give ourselves grace when disappointing, aggravating, or annoying things happen. That's totally fine. What isn't fine is getting stuck in it and allowing our thoughts to become catastrophized to everything else in our world, right? So that's, I think, part and parcel of what we're going to be jumping into today.
Yeah. So let's go through your example. I mean, you had something happen, like you said, and we don't need to be specific. That was disappointing for you in your day to day.
Yeah.
And how this usually happens is something happens, and I'm going to go through your team framework that I learned from you. You have these bad thoughts. Crap, this happens. Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. Oh, well, maybe this happened because I'm such a loser, or maybe I don't deserve this, or maybe I'm not good enough. Which leads to actions. These actions may be that you don't show up right, that you disengage, that you maybe start drinking, maybe you do other things, right? And after these actions, those manifest results. Now, if you're going down that doom and gloom way, this may mean that you, again, start drinking more. It may mean that you miss days of work, you miss days with your family, you are reactionary with people that you love. Mm-hmm. Now, you still had the thoughts, but you didn't go down to have the rest of those. So can you just explain that a little bit more?
Yeah. So what we were talking about, which truthfully occurred to me in a different way today, which is this. I allowed myself to sit in the emotion, to be disappointed, to be angry, because that's completely okay.
And that's human.
And that's completely human. What I said to you though was the difference though is I didn't allow the emotion to connect back to the thought. So I didn't allow myself to catastrophize that, you know, nothing's going to work out. Everybody is going to do the same kind of thing to me or with me. You know, it's always going to be hard, blah, 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 blah. I didn't do that. I allowed myself to be upset. I actually allowed myself to get up from this chair. This is where I work every day. And I went in the living room and I watched a little daytime TV because I was like, that's what I want to do right now.
Mm-hmm.
But what I then decided was that I wanted to channel this energy differently. And so I actually reached out to a couple friends and I said, listen, I just had something really crappy happen. And because of that, I want to share with you how much I appreciate you being in my life. Like, yes, as cheesy as that sounded, I really did that. And so it started getting me to focus differently on different things. And so I allowed myself the grace of the emotional response, but didn't allow myself the excuse of saying, this is the way it's always going to be. Or, you know, if we talk about frustrations with team members, maybe that disappointed you for whatever reason, you know, nobody wants to work hard anymore. Everybody's going to do it, et cetera. Really? Like everybody? How true is that? Because life or our daily lives is not a domino game. Like those dominoes that topple each other, they ain't connected. I'm sorry. And it's the thought that can connect one domino to the next that can really get you in trouble to start that depressive cascade that hopefully you can avoid in it as long as there isn't any underlying, you know, diagnosable mental illness challenge.
One of the important things I heard you say was checking the truth in your thought.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You love to say, how true is this?
Yes.
And yeah, so you had the thought that this sucks. I'm pissed off. This is annoying. This time in my day is not what I wanted.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you did go down that cascade a little bit and you said, this is going to keep happening to me. Mm-hmm. Nobody's interested in working with me, mm-hmm. et cetera. Then that is when you would have that question for yourself. How true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the truth of the matter is I had a really important call later this same day. So we're recording now at around the noon hour for us. And so the disappointing thing happened at 7:30 in the morning. And I had a really, really important call at 11. And I sat down and used my team framework backwards, or meet as the case may be. And I said, what do I want to manifest out of this next call? And, you know, therefore, how do I have to act during that call? What kind of emotion do I need to bring? The call couldn't have gone better. This was someone I actually had never interacted with before. We had a lot of common interests, both professionally and things that we focus on. And I even said to this person toward the end of the call, I said, I so appreciate you. I thank you so much. I'm very excited to work with you. And I told her, I said, I have to tell you, I had something very disappointing happen to me this morning. And this just completely made my day. And she said, I never would have known. So how cool is that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to say a little quote from one of my early mentors, a guy named Erwin McManus, who's a published author, speaker, just an amazing mm-hmm. guy. And he was actually one of the people that told me that I should start teaching this stuff to dentists, because I came to him when I was in burnout. And he said, okay, you know, why don't you start teaching this to people? You could really help a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's something he said. He said, your emotions do not give you the right to your actions. Just because you're feeling something doesn't mean you have to act on it.
Yep.
And he said, that is a lack of mastery of yourself. You do not have self-mastery if that's the case.
Yes.
So he said, be jealous, but don't act on your jealousy. Be mm-hmm. angry, but don't act on your anger. And yeah. what many people say is, but I need to be honest. I need to be true to who I am. As if your emotions have mastery over your actions.
Yeah.
So when you're acting on your emotions, you really don't have self-mastery. When you Correct. Experience those emotions, but the emotions don't control your actions, that is having true self-mastery. And I heard him say this, it made so much sense to me. And I love that. He said, you don't have the right to let your thoughts create your actions.
That's really cool. I love that because, you know, I mean, if you think about it almost as a cascade or a butterfly effect, right? Because we're all human beings. And so let's say you're allowing your emotions to dictate your actions. And let's just say your actions are your mood and how you're interacting with other people in your universe. And so you end up interacting with somebody on your team or some loved one, et cetera. And they then therefore interpret your action or your mood, your demeanor, your commentary through the lens of their filter. Now we just potentially ruin somebody else's day. Again, their responsibility, just like it's yours.
Sure.
But just please, ladies and gentlemen, entertain the thought for just a minute. You know, how do we turn that frown upside down kind of thing without being toxic, right?
Well, this was a lot of my experience when I was in burnout. Was I was tired, I was frustrated, I felt ineffective. And then a patient would want their money back. Or a patient would be pissed off because the shade on a single central didn't come back perfect the first time. Or a team member was late. And I was so frustrated and tired and ineffective so that I would get home with my family, which were the people that needed me the most and that really I needed the most. And I was reactive and short and snippy with them, which then made me feel sad about that too. And made them feel sad too. And I don't want people to listen and say, well, you can't be sad about things. No, you can be sad, but I think it should stop with you.
Yeah. And so let's use this scenario because, you know, I coach a lot of people one-on-one and this, the exact scenario you just brought up comes up all the time in a bunch of different colors or different ways. And so given the fact that the scenario we're talking about is interacting with the people that matter to us most, we come home and you know what, if you need 5-10 minutes, then take it. And, you know, say to your spouse, hey, listen, I've had a really challenging day. I really want to be here for you. You know what? I just need 5-10 minutes to kind of work through some stuff.
I would even add to that. To set the expectation before you arrive.
Oh, yeah. Possible. Great.
So call or text and say, you know, hey, honey, I'm going to be home in 15 minutes just to let you know. I need like 10 minutes to decompress or I want to take a shower first. So just to let you know, like nothing against you, but it's been kind of crazy today. And I think I'll be better for everybody after I have 10 minutes.
No, I think that's great. I think also let's give the good folks a practical tool. And so this is literally the second time this has ever seen the light of day. This is going to be in my book that's coming out in 2025. It's called Move. And so it's a framework that buoys off of team, thoughts, emotions, actions, manifestations. But this is a framework in the moment that you can use that is very similar to some of the things you teach, Kyle, relative to realize being the first element of the Ripple framework. So the framework is NBC, like the network, NBCA. So the N stands for notice. Notice your emotions. Notice what you're feeling. Notice how you're reacting. Once you notice it, breathe. That's the B. After you notice these things, take a breath, count to 10, whatever works for you. The C in NBC is choose. So while you're breathing, think about the reality of your reaction and choose how you want to react within that situation. And then act upon your choice. Once you have noticed it, breathe, chosen an action that's been reality tested, then you act upon that thought that will likely be different than the knee-jerk emotional reaction or response initially. So
it's great. I love it. Let's go deeper into that.
Okay.
The first one, notice. This is a reoccurring theme that you and I like to talk about. And I always like to say that it is like you being there, you becoming a ghost, going into the sky and looking down on yourself. It's like a way of having self-awareness for your own emotions. And I'll tell you this, if this is all you can do, if you set a yearly goal and all your goal is to have self-awareness of your emotions, Even if you don't stop it from cascading, but if you just spend a year doing that, it is a huge value add.
Oh, amen. I mean,
just having self-awareness on I'm feeling this way. It's like it's yeah. things that we try to teach children, but mm-hmm. many of us adults suffer with this.
Oh,
and
100%.
Even if you're not talking about your emotions, even if you're just talking about your strengths and weaknesses, this yeah. is so valuable.
Yeah, I think, you know, the word emotion, you know, ends up having different connotations for different people. And if you're unfamiliar with the term emotional intelligence, I'd invite you to look it up, because what's interesting about emotional intelligence is that it's multifaceted, and it's not just about being self-aware of your emotions. It's that, it is partly that, but it's also your stress tolerance, your flexibility, your empathy, your level of social responsibility, et cetera. It's how you interact with the world and how you can end up using emotions as a tool to navigate through this world differently, build deeper, broader relationships, et cetera, et cetera. So that notice piece is hugely important.
Yeah, and then let's go to the next one, breathe. Mm-hmm. I mean, breathe. So much research about this.
Yep.
I've become very passionate about this when I got into my whole sleep era, let's call it. Mm-hmm. If we want to go to
what are you, Taylor Swift?
Yeah, I'm in my sleep era right now. And I have been for 4 years, maybe. So much research with breathing. I mean, we're teaching yeah. children this now too, with you know, the Navy SEALs do something called box breathing, mm-hmm. which is 5 seconds in, 5 seconds hold, 5 seconds out, 5 seconds hold. Mm-hmm. I love that because it's very mm-hmm. visual for me. Mm-hmm. I like doing that one because I kind of think about a box, or think yeah. about even just going up, hold, and down, hold. It just becomes very, very, yeah. Very visual for me. And it's one of these things that breathing is one of the only autonomic things that we can actually control. You yeah. know, breathing is a weird thing to where you don't have to think about it to breathe. Your body will breathe or else you die, right? Mm-hmm. But if you control it, you can control things like your own heart rate,
yep,
like your own blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
As mm-hmm. all of us doctors know that are listening to this, it's all connected.
Yeah,
and for anybody 100%. That does sedation, you know that you're sedating somebody and their tongue falls in the back of their throat, the first thing you hear is the beep, 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 yeah. right? You start hearing their blood, their heart rate go up
mm-hmm.
because they're not having the respiration, right? So it needs to get mm-hmm. all of that oxygen faster and push it out to all the peripheral systems. So it's something that is so basic, but so physiologically important. Physiologically
yeah.
important. Yeah.
We knew what you meant. Yeah. yeah. No, that's yeah, it's a huge thing. And you know, I don't know if you knew this about me, but when I was a kid, I really suffered from what they diagnosed as atypical migraine. I had these very horrific dizzy spells. I actually missed 39 days of school in fifth wow. grade, which is a huge amount. And we tried all kinds of things, medications and all kinds of things, but my parents found a biofeedback practitioner.
Wow, back then.
Which is the old term for what I'll call breath work and meditation today. Mm-hmm. And they would hook me up to a machine that would, you know, be audible with my heart rate and respiratory rate and so forth. And they had these recordings with visualization. So yeah, I mean, we're talking, I'm dating myself, 1980, 1982, I was doing biofeedback. So it's a huge deal. I mean, controlled breathing is such an amazing tool, right?
And I love that it's so simple. It doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, exactly.
You can do it in the hallway if you yeah. walk out of a, you know, walk out of working yeah. on a patient that you had a difficult
yeah.
time with.
Yeah.
You had just had a challenging talk with a laboratory technician or with your spouse or with mm-hmm. you know, anybody. Mm-hmm. It's free. You can do it anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's so helpful.
And I think the other thing to point out too is, because we talked about this a lot in my happiness studies course relative to meditation, which is part and parcel with breathing as well. And so you don't have to be sitting on a cushion in a quiet room with your shoes off. You can have certain focus types of meditation. You can be walking and focusing on a street sign that's, you know, two blocks away. You can be sitting and just looking at your, you know, signs of periodontal disease poster on the wall. Like, you don't need to have something fancy, quiet, or formal to engage in these techniques, which I think is
Let's go to the next one. Let's go to the C, choose how you want to react.
Yeah.
Can you go deeper into that?
Yeah. This is a bit of reality testing of the situation and your reality, meaning, as redundant as that sounds, meaning how true is the story that I have going on in my head right now? And if I really wanted a positive outcome, a good outcome, an outcome that I'd be happy with, whatever that is, what would I need to do right now? So that's the thought process of choice. What do I need to do right now to bring myself forward to a positive outcome, right?
I think about this. It's funny. Something that just came to me. And
yeah. You know,
people that are in their 40s or 50s will probably remember this, but I remember a Saved by the Bell episode.
Yes.
And there was a Saved by the Bell episode where everybody stopped and froze. And then someone came out and said, like, now, you know, I'm wondering what Lisa Turtle is going to do. And Zach Morris may do this. And then they kind of go. And everybody goes again.
Yes.
I'm kind of thinking about that with our own life, right? Yes. If you could stop time and say, how would I like to react in this? The patient just said this to me. Really feeling frustrated with that. But I want to retain this relationship. I want to keep them as a patient. And
there you go.
I also may want to set a boundary here. This is how I'm going to react. And then you go, one, two, three, go. And you're back into the moment. That's kind of how I think about this.
Yeah. So you bring up an interesting point. And so for those that are, you know, frequent listeners of ours, you've heard us say before that these thought skills, these mindset skills, they're skills. And so they may go on between your ears, but they take no less practice, patience, and persistence than skills you acquire with your hands. So what you're going to find, and I found this myself, is that when we do embrace these concepts and really do, when we need to, you know, say by the bell pause, over time, that pause needs to be shorter and shorter and shorter. And then over time, your inclination when something crappy happens will be a different thought process. But the only reason why that has occurred is because you put the patient's practice and persistence into, you know, choosing a different path, breathing, being, noticing what's going on so that you can have the space to breathe, have the space to choose, and act in a way that's going to bring you forward rather than making a situation stagnate or frankly get worse.
Yeah, I think about this, you know, in jiu-jitsu, they talk about making things muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like, we want to make this brain memory.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, whatever that means, right? So that it's an automatic thing for you.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
You notice it, crap, I'm feeling very frustrated right now. Mm-hmm. You do your breathing. Yep. You say, how do I want to respond here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you act.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny. You're making me think of a good buddy of mine that I did my coach training with. His name's Mark. And he's like 6'5". He's got longer hair. He's got a science degree. And for a year, no joke, he lived in Africa in a tent observing lions.
Oh my God.
And so I hope I painted a picture for one of the most chill dudes you've ever met in your life. What I love most about Mark is that he never answers quickly. He always thinks about it. And it's funny because one time, you made me think when you paused and closed your eyes, one time he and I had this whole conversation that there's been situations in his life where people thought he was like slow on the uptake because he would pause. And it's like, what a gift he's given himself.
I've seen this with interviews with very smart people.
Oh, he's brilliant. Yeah.
Tech founders, you know, one of them I'm thinking of is Elon Musk. You know, he's kind of polarizing, but everyone I think can say he's very smart, right? Sure. And you'll see him on interviews or podcasts and they'll ask him a question and he'll go.
Yeah.
You know, let me think about that a little bit. And as a pod, you know, you're listening to a podcast and you're going like, did my podcast turn off? Is my phone okay? You know, you're looking at your computer. What happened here? And we're so used to that, that, oh my gosh, it draws you in even more. I mean, this is a common public speaking tip is to have these pauses. But you're so right on that. You're so right that I think very smart people, once you learn this, will take the time. I've told this many times. I think about, you know, when the AI company that I started, Pearl, was really starting to scale. And we were doing a lot of sales calls. And I would have a lot of the salespeople tell me, you know, I'm getting all these questions from doctors. They're asking me clinical questions that I don't know. And I don't know what to say. And I said, you know, you can say, I'm sorry, I don't know that answer.
Yeah.
Let me talk to our co-founder, Dr. Stanley, and I'll get back to you. Or you could think about it and you could look it up. I mean, I think there's this thing that we have to respond right away. And you can do this with patients too. I've seen a lot of young doctors get in trouble on this because they think they need to have an answer.
Yeah.
So you may have a patient that says, well, what happens if this tooth fractures? You may say, I don't know. You know, let me talk to the endodontist and let me see if there's a way that we could save that. Or, you know, I'd like to ask some of my other colleagues. Let me look at something. You don't always have to come back. And getting comfortable in that space, you and I have talked about getting comfortable in the space between stimulus and response, getting comfortable in that space for the awareness aspect is so powerful.
And let's talk a little bit, because I absolutely love that. Let's add a little tactical element to this too. So relative to getting back to somebody, what ideally that you want to do is under promise and over deliver.
Yeah.
So there's basically two ways you can go with this. A, it could be like, hey, I commit to get back to you by Friday, knowing that you can get back to them by Wednesday or Thursday. That's number one. Or we can flip it and say, when would you like to hear back from me? Which of course opens up a little bit of a danger that they may ask for a time that's too quick.
Unrealistic.
But then you can counter with something that you know you're going to be able to deliver.
True.
So, but I think that the tactical commitment of a given time frame for response is really quite important. I mean, think of sitting on an airplane and you're looking at your watch and you know you were supposed to push back at 9. It's now 9:17 and the pilot hasn't said a damn thing, right? Versus the pilot that gets on at 8:59 and says, hey, I just want to let you know everything's fine. We're going to leave here today. We're waiting for blah, 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 blah. It should be 10 minutes. I will get back to you before that's up. And then they do. And I mean, it's a completely different experience, 100%.
I see that as the expectation setting so much.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So talking about emotional resilience in the dental profession, how I see this is handling challenging times. And one of the big things that I think helped me in this is becoming a new person. Now, what I mean by that is not being glued to my profession, not being Kyle with the doctor on it, being Dr. Kyle Stanley all the time, is being two separate beings, being Kyle when I'm not in the practice and being Dr. Stanley when I'm in the practice. But even when I'm in the practice and I am Dr. Stanley, not having my self-worth entirely come from my profession. That made me more resilient to bad things happening, because let's be honest, a crown is going to pop off, an implant is going to not integrate, a patient's going to want their money back, a team member is going to quit on Friday afternoon when you have a Monday scheduled full, right? This is going to happen in your profession. Dentistry has these challenges.
Yeah.
So it's about learning how to know they're coming, prepare for them, avoid them if you can.
Yeah.
There's a lot of preparation that can be involved to avoid some of these. And then also, when the ones do happen, how to handle them. I heard a quote recently that was something like, there's two ways to handle stress. One is learning how to avoid it. There's certain ones that you can avoid, right? By preparation. And then learning how to handle the ones that are unavoidable. And so on the podcast, we've talked before about how to avoid some of these. Mm-hmm. So there's ways to avoid some stresses, like pre-planning, like doing a wax up, like having a conversation about failures with your patient and complications and how much they're going to cost, talking about fees openly, right? Mm-hmm. Even setting your production goals so that you can take time off, right? That is a form of stress for people. Hey, I really want to take time off, but I can't because I don't have the money or I don't have the time. Or all of those things are things that can be avoided with proper preparation. But then there's things that can't be avoided. Like, I don't know, I'm giving an example. Let's just say patient breaks a tooth after you did a filling a year ago.
Yeah.
So let's say you did everything clinically correct.
Yeah.
They come back and break the tooth or there's sensitivity, but you did, I mean, your bonding system was perfect. Your occlusion was right. They bit on a candy and broke the tooth and now they're pissed off.
Yeah.
That's unavoidable. So in that case, we have to use the tools that Martin taught us today to get through this.
And I think it goes back to one of the first things we talked about not connecting the emotion to the thought. So we care about what we do and we care about our patients. And it's totally cool to be not happy and disappointed that it fractured. While at the same time, we can't go into the thought spiral that I'm a crappy dentist, you know, I can't believe this is going to happen, blah, 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 blah. So the reality testing piece can literally be something as tactical as, wait a minute, how many restorations have I done since this one? I mean, not exactly, you know, who knows that off the top of your head, but it's like, and how many of those have broken and blah, blah, blah. So it's really important to do that. I mean, I see this with my dentist clients all the time. It's like, oh, I felt terrible, et cetera. It's like, wait, stop. Yeah, great. I'm glad that you don't feel great about it because that tells me you're human. And let's talk about the numbers here. How many of these have you done? How many of these have failed? What do we think are the variables or the factors that cause this failure versus other situations? And so you're again reality testing the situation, which by the way might even teach you something later. For example, let's say they were a heavy bruxer as an example, and you realize you didn't counsel the patient of the risks of fracture, granted.
Right.
Or as an example.
Well, I had somewhat of an experience with this recently. So one of my friends, she had asked me for a referral for a breast surgery. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I gave her a referral to someone that I trust and I really know and have sent patients before. And she had a complication. Mm-hmm. She had an infection. She had to go to the hospital. You know, had to have IV antibiotics, all kinds of stuff. Not fun for anybody, right? Yeah. Not fun for the patient, not fun for the doctor. No. What her and her husband said, and her husband is my good friend, is that, gosh, the surgeon handled it so well. He said, he said it's only his fourth time happening and he's done 4,000 surgeries. So when you think about that, I'm sure he was really frustrated.
Yeah.
But he said, gosh, I've done 4,000 of these. This is the fourth time I've had an infection. And what my friends said, because they're very easygoing, they said, thank God it was us because we are very understanding. They have the finances to do whatever they need to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was so great how the surgeon handled it. He was there for the patients. He gave them everything, you know. And on the flip side too, they were great patients, very understanding about it.
Yeah.
And it was just such a nice thing for both people to feel like a bad thing happened.
Yes. Yes.
For everybody involved.
Yeah.
But everybody came away feeling good about it, actually.
So you just said something that made me think. So they happen to be, as you said, good patients and appreciative patients. And so
and realistic there's a lot of expectations, which is one of the best things.
But there's also a lot of people and patients out there that aren't understanding despite expectations being set. And so this brings up a very important thing to discuss in light of this topic today, which is, look, if that individual ends up still being persnickety, despite setting expectations, despite doing everything that you could, despite doing everything by the book, and they're still angry and persnickety, okay. But, and again, okay to be frustrated that you're not feeling heard and feeling frustrated that you've done the best that you can and still having this challenging situation. But that doesn't mean that you're a crappy dentist. It doesn't mean that you're a crappy communicator. It simply means that in this juncture with this relationship, we're not going to see eye to eye. And sometimes that's just got to be okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's having that awareness that I've done everything that I could. I've done everything with the skills that I have at the time.
Yeah.
And if this patient or this other person involved in this relationship is not getting this, then I can't blame myself. I can try to be there for them and I can try to explain as much as I can, but it may just be them.
Well, you know, it's funny. You just made me think of something. You know, 2020 was not fun for any of us. And I had a whole bunch of weirdnesses that happened to me. I fell and I broke my sternum and I thought I had an ulcer and it was like, So I had an endoscopy and a colonoscopy in late 2020. And I get home and within 2 hours of coming home, I spiked like 102, 103 fever. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is not normal. This is not good. Like, what is going on? Like, what now? Right. So I guess my point is that our demeanor matters as well. And so I called up the doctor. I got the doctor on call, but then my doctor called me immediately. And he was just so nice about it. And he completely acknowledged what I was going through. He said, look, it makes perfect sense you're concerned. I understand why you're concerned. He said, there were no perforations. He said, it literally made me laugh. He goes, there was no aspiration, Martin. He goes, you know how I know that? Because there was nothing in your stomach, because I was in your stomach. And I just started laughing. So I think demeanor is important. And the reason why I bring this story up is don't give that person back what they're laying down to you. Mm. If they're being really nasty, et cetera, don't give it back to them. Because you feel you need to show them, that's not going to do anybody any good.
It's true. And that was definitely how I was in burnout was when the patient was mad, then I got mad at them for being mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
And many times my partner, Matt, would hear me talking with the patient, and be like, Dr. Stanley, can I talk to you about something? And he'd bring me out and be like, hey, I heard what's happening. You mind if I talk to the patient real quick? And he went in there as a third party and would totally change the vibe.
Yeah.
Right. Because he wasn't emotionally involved. And so he could come in and change the vibe. And then I got a second to breathe and relax.
Yeah.
Now, when I came back in, the patient was more relaxed and ready to talk about what are we going to do next? Yes, we had a complication. Let's say, what are we going to do next?
Yep.
And it was really helpful to have my partner supporting me as a third party. Mm-hmm. And hear me, especially because I was going through difficult times.
Yeah, totally.
But he was not totally at the time.
Yeah, totally.
So let's bring this into landing. We've talked about emotional resilience in the dental profession. We've talked about your team framework, thoughts, emotions lead to actions that manifest results. We've talked about your NBCA, that is notice, breathe, choose, and act. Any other final thoughts that you have or just nuances to these feelings that we're going to have in dentistry?
I think I just want to make a t-shirt that says life is not a domino game. And so, you know, life is about the good, the bad, you know, you're going to have great days. You're going to have bad days. And that just is what it is. And so when we look at our lives as a domino game, meaning, oh my gosh, what's going to happen now? Well, you're setting yourself up to look for that next fallen domino rather than just being present in the moment. And no, that's not necessarily easy to do, but it is that simple. And my challenge to everybody is, as you embrace these different types of thought patterns more and more, it will become an acquired skill, just like prepping a crown. There's no difference. The only difference is which part of your body is deploying the skill. In between your ears versus between your fingers. That's the only difference.
No, that's a great way to finish. And that's something that Martin and I have been on this journey for probably much longer than many of you. We've started fairly early on this journey of emotional resilience and creating these skills. And I will tell you, These are skills. I've gotten better at them, just like how 5 years out of school, I was much better at doing insert X dental dental procedure than I was when I first got out of school. And it's the same way. Now that I'm 6, 7 years into this emotional journey, I'm much better at it. Now, I still have a way to go. I can still improve, just like how in dentistry, you can always slightly improve, right? But it is a skill. I've put time and money and effort, just like how Martin has too, and how many of our participants that take our live courses and our online courses have done. And you see changes.
Yeah.
People change. They get better. They create a skill. Communication is a skill. Setting boundaries is a skill. Setting expectations is a skill. It's all a skill, but you got to put the time and money and effort into it.
Yep.
So we hope you guys enjoyed this today. If you haven't written us a written review, we would love to have a written review. If you guys are enjoying this, if you listen to some episodes and you really got value out of this, just go to Apple Music or no, podcast. That's what it is. Go to podcasts on Apple and write us a review. We'd love to have that. And if you're interested in other things that we do, whether it's Martin's coaching, his upcoming book that you can, they can pre-sign up for that right now already.
Yeah. Right? So currently, as we're recording this, it's just a simple email notification list that when it's available for pre-order, you'll be notified. And then you can make the choice whether you want to get it at that point.
That's right. Whether you want to, whether you're interested in Martin's online courses and my online courses, or if you want to come to our next Lightside Live that we do, our 2-day workshop, you can go to our links on wellnessanddentistry.com and find all of that stuff there. We'll see you on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry. See you later.
Bye-bye.